It's in a great location. It's right next to the Children's Discovery Museum. It's 3 blocks from the water. It's going to get us a great tax write-off for 2023. And over the long term, it's going to be fantastic.
Think about balancing that with new investments. So like in December, it's a busy time of the year for investment activity, because if you're looking back in 2023 and you've had a bunch of gains, now is the time to make great new investments that are going to give you offset in depreciation for those gains that you've had in 2023.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea here with my wonderful co-host, Ryan Gibson. Hello again, friend.
Hello. How are you? Getting ready for the end of the year.
Already. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I'm getting my taxes ready actually for next year already. I've got all my K-1s we're putting in the hopper and getting all that stuff buttoned up so we can get our investors their K-1s next year. That's what I'm focused on right now. What are you focused on right now? You just had an awesome house purchase in Reno, right?
Yeah. We just bought a house in Reno. We're going to get all into that because it's a tax strategy. It's a year-end tax strategy that I wanted to share. We've got some exciting and unique year-end tax strategy tidbits for you. And that's part of why we've had a little bit of a hiatus. I think it's worth mentioning, since I think people have realized at this point that that there might have been a missing episode or two there. Part of the reason for that is just Ryan and my schedule being so busy, and this tax strategy that we're going to tell you about. We've been up in Reno trying to put this house together. So you're going to hear all about that. But before we dive in, let's just take it from the top. This is something that, you know, I hear from CPAs all the time is, you know, people want a CPA that strategizes with them and says, okay, here's what you need to be doing throughout the year. Well, most CPAs are too busy for that. They are focused on preparing your taxes. And when it comes to, you know, a few days before April 15th, and people could say, you know, hey, what can I do to reduce my tax bill? It's too late already.
Too late.
You know,
yep.
You got to do some things in that tax year in order to protect yourself a little bit. We're going to kick things off. Ryan is going to kick us off with a couple of his favorite strategies, and then I'm going to follow on with a few of mine, and hopefully it helps some people make some strategic moves. Obviously, we don't offer any tax, legal, or investment advice on this show. This is for educational purposes only. Consult with your CPA before, you know, doing anything serious. Don't come back to us and say, hey, that didn't work because of my specific situation. But this is all great for context, and I think we'll have some fun with it. So Ryan, what are some ways that you might be moving some money around in order to shelter some income this year?
I've got five things that I focus
Hit
on.
Us.
All right, let's do it. Number one thing, contributions to retirement accounts is something Excellent. That you want to get done. Number two, any Roth conversions that you want to do with your retirement accounts are good things. Number three, I'm going to steal the quote from the host of the show, Tate Duryea, on the poor man's 1031 exchange. We're going to talk about what I do there. And then I start to think about revaluing IRA investments to see before I do that in-service conversion. So that's number four. And number five, I'm going to go through all of my investments and help my CPA sort of best understand where I'm going to be gaining and where I'm going to be losing or to getting depreciation on cash. So those are the kind of the five things. I'm going to dive into each one.
Awesome.
All right.
So number one.
Number one, we talked about, you know, maxing out your retirement accounts to take full advantage of your tax shield, right? So that's traditional. If you're making too much money, you can do a traditional IRA. And then you can convert it. We'll talk about that in a second. You can make contributions to 529 plans, to Coverdale plans, if you're into that. You can talk about making contributions to your, you know, HSA if you're doing that. You're maxing out your 401k. all those basic things are things that you want to do before year end so that you can take advantage, full advantage of all the things that the beautiful things that the government gives us to shield our taxes, and also think about the long-term investment that you want to have when you retire. So those are like one of the first things. The second thing I want to talk about, and you know, is really thinking about, I'm going to jump in, I'm going to skip around a little bit, but the thing that I want to focus on is like gains and losses, right? So if you are in a syndication or you've got real property and you've sold it and you're expecting a gain, you want to be thinking about that gain and communicating that with your CPA. So you think about all the wins that you've had this year. Maybe you've had a big return of capital, or you've sold a property, and you want to start thinking about how much, you know, above the basis in that investment you're getting back so that you're going to be taxed on, right? And then think about balancing that with new investments. So like in December, it's a busy time of the year for investment activity, because if you're looking back in 2023 and you've had a bunch of gains, now is the time to make great new investments that are going to give you offset in depreciation for those gains that you've had in 2023. So I'll break it down simply. You had $1 million property. Let's say you have, you know, no basis in it. So let's say for the purpose of this talking points, you have $1 million property, sell, you make $1 million. You want to buy something that can offset that gain. And as you get into the higher tax brackets, you know, that gain becomes pretty close to, can be pretty close to ordinary rates, you know, so super high tax gain. So I'm thinking about what can I invest in and get depreciation on to offset that $1 million gain this year.
And you're talking about basically a lazy man's 1031, right?
A lazy man's 1031. That's right.
Yeah. So if you didn't have the opportunity to 1031 it, which would be ideal, but it's not the end of the world if you didn't. Yeah, you got this fat gain that's sitting there staring in the face that's going to slap you on April 15th. Well, if you reinvest that money into another real estate deal that can generate losses prior to the end of the year, that's what I call lazy man's 1031. So there you go.
That's right. That's it. I'm taking it right from you. The other thing that I really like is, so you might have a traditional IRA, right? And you can actually convert that to a Roth. And we all know it's the backdoor conversion, and they tried to take that away actually in a recent bill, but it's still there. It's we can do that. So you can put money into a traditional IRA, and I don't know what the limits are. 6,000 this year, or is it 6,500, something like that? I don't know. I can't remember what it was.
I can look that up. But by the way, you can invest in 2023 up until April 15th of 2024, just to be clear. You do not have to do this by December 31st.
That's right. But the conversion has to happen by the end of the year, from my understanding. So
okay.
If you're going to convert it, you've got to do it now. And that's why I was kind of leading to what I was going to say next, which is you can actually convert it to a Roth so that, you know, you can, when you retire, you can take out the, you know, the earnings tax free. And yes, you pay the tax today, but it grows, you know, tax-free, et cetera. So
let's talk real quickly about the difference between traditional and Roth, because, you know, just to, as a refresher here, if you contribute to the traditional side, you're going to be able to wipe that off your taxes this year, right? So if you contribute $6,000 to your traditional IRA, you're going to reduce your taxable income by $6,000. But if you do the conversion, it's, you owe the tax again, right? Because the conversion taxed that $6,000 back onto your taxable income. So I just want to make sure that's clear.
That's correct.
So if you're having a really big year this year, you might not want to do the conversion this year. You might want to take the tax, you know, tax deduction this year and contribute it to that traditional account. You can always convert later. So on a year that maybe you're flying a little bit less and you're just making less money, those are good years to do those conversions.
Yeah. And I want to tell you a huge hack that some of my savvy investors do. And I want to share this secret. I don't think a lot of people talk about this. So we had an investor, and I actually had somebody write in today and tell me, hey, you guys should do this. And I'm like, well, we don't really do that. Like, we have a lot of investors that do this, but we don't do this for you. You have to go do this process. Let's say you have a self-directed IRA and you've invested in a syndication. So you've set up your Quest account or NewView or whatever, and you set it up and it's traditional money. So you put it in tax-free, but it's growing and then it'll be taxed when you take it out. Okay. And you've invested it into a syndication. Let's just say you put in $100,000. I have a story of an investor who did that with one of our syndications. And then what they do before they convert it to a Roth, because remember, they're going to pay taxes on that. So if you put $100,000 in, you're going to pay taxes. If you convert it to Roth, you're going to pay $100,000 in gain, right? So you're going to have, like Tate said, if you have a low flying year.
Ordinary income, tax onto your ordinary income.
So here's what savvy investors do. And you can do this within the same year. So my investor said, I'm going to go to a place that values my investment. They'll give you an actual third party valuation on that deal. Mm-hmm. And this was a development deal that we had. So, you know, once you start developing or whatever, maybe, you know, there might be a case to make. And again, I don't make these valuations, that the value in the property has gone down and therefore their investment has gone down. So these third party independent verifiers will actually say, okay, your $100,000 investment is only worth $30,000, let's just say. So you get this letter in your hand that says, my $100,000 investment is now worth 30.
You do the conversion.
And then you do the conversion.
Right.
So you're only taxed on $30,000 and then you're still in the deal, right? Now, I'm not going to judge, you know, how they do their fair market valuations of the investment, but they do, I know, and you need to check this, but some of the companies that do this, they back you with insurance and E&O and all this stuff to make sure that, you know, they're going to stand behind how they value the asset. Now, it's a little bit of a work on my end as the operator, because I have to send all my reports and, you know, all this stuff to you, right? So that you can go get this valued. But this conversion play is huge, because think about it. I had an investor do $100,000. They got a valuation for 30. That's exactly what happened. So they saved tax on $70,000 at the ordinary rate. And the best part?
When it comes back to them at $200,000, it's all tax-free.
A year later, actually, we made a 2.6x multiple.
Oh,
on that,
so it'd
deal.
Be $260,000 that was coming back to them.
That's correct. So they didn't pay any tax going in. They only paid tax on $30,000 for a $260,000 gain.
That's incredible. And it's all tax-free because it's in a Roth IRA, because they did
That's
the
right.
conversion. I like that. By the way, E&O would be errors and omissions insurance.
That's correct. So yeah. Basically, they're just standing behind, you know, what you're doing. So
yes.
Convert.
Excellent.
Put all your money in the account, max your stuff out. Like Tate says, you do have until, you know, the remainder of the year, but maybe you start planning how much you're going to put in now. Communicate with your CPA. Get a ledger of your gains, your losses, what you're planning on having. You know, sort of, I like to, you know, kind of inspect what I expect. Like, you know, I inspect, like, okay, I have, or expect or inspect, however they say it. But basically, I like to know, you know, hey, what am I looking at this year, and how am I being positioned so that when I get my taxes, I mean, it, I don't want to be surprised on how much I might owe or under or over payment. So I kind of want to land that, you know, super nice. You know, one thing I'm thinking about too is like, what investments do I want to make next year? How do I want to position myself to invest in the new year? And what are my goals? And I kind of look at my portfolio and say, you know, I'm heavy in multifamily, or I'm heavy in storage, or whatever it might be. Like, where am I actually going to place capital next year? And how much do I want to place? I start thinking about these things at the end of the year so that, you know, I can make goals for the year. And I think that's super important to do that. So,
yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And on the business side, you know, I'm, you know, for my investors, you know, we have thousands of K-1s we've got to get out. So I'm putting all those K-1, you know, all the data and all the information and all the cost segregation studies, all that stuff is happening right now. It actually started 45 days ago, so that we're ready for the March tax season as it hits up. And, you know, I talked about this on one of our earlier episodes, but you know, I just want to tell investors, you know, as you get into this alternative investment space, and as you start, you know, becoming kind of an alternative investor, somebody who invests in real estate and rentals and things like that, please get in the habit of extending your tax return.
Yes.
You know, you're just going to create a lot of headache if you don't extend. And, you know, my CPA always says it's better to extend than amend. And if you're trying to rush through your tax return, it's going to be very difficult for you to, you know, amend it. You know, that might trigger something else. So just get in the habit of extending. All these K-1s are going to come at different times and all these things. So, you know, really just yeah, just get in the habit of extending. I mean, all my super wealthy friends and investors are all, they all extend, you know, myself included. So I'm not even thinking about my personal return until much later in 2024.
Yeah, I have to piggyback on that. You know, I think that a lot of investors, you know, who are a little less experienced, they're, especially if they're type A personalities that really like things to be buttoned up and on time, it can be hard for them to let go of that. But I can tell you, you know, every really sophisticated investor out there extends. It gives their CPAs more time. Your CPA is going to be a lot less busy in June, July, and August after they've had some time to breathe in May. And they're going to be able to actually give you more attention. And from what I've been told, it reduces your audit risk as well.
Yeah, we don't, obviously, we're not, you know, IRS license agents or whatever, you know.
This is what I've gathered from CPAs is they prefer because the audit risk is lower later in the year because the IRS has already sort of selected those cases that they want to look at. So anyway, take that for what it is. What else can people do towards the end of the year, Ryan?
You know, I start to, you know, again, if I have that ledger of gains and losses, I start looking for investments that have depreciation. And this is the time of the year that, you know, you're kind of in the final moments. You know, if you are looking at a syndication that, or an investment or buying real property that has, you know, that you can actually know that you're going to close by the end of the year, it gives you a great offset into any gains that you've had earlier in the year. So, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, keeping a tally of my depreciation. And, you know, you can find that in your tax return as well. If you ask your CPA where it is, they can see kind of where you, how much maybe depreciation you had from last year that you haven't used yet. And things like that. Because I remember it rolls from year to year to year. So
excellent. I'm going to rip through a couple other ones real quick before I get into my favorite one. If you have a taxable brokerage account, use some tax loss harvesting. What that means is selling stocks that have you've taken a loss on. Obviously, if you rebuy them within 30 days, that's what's called a wash sale. And so you're not going to get the tax loss on that. But if you know that you've just got a dud and you don't think it's going to come back anytime soon, you can sell that. And get the loss. You could also buy, you know, if you own GM and you want to sell that at a loss and then buy Ford, that's allowed. So that's a way that you know, get back into the market right away and still keep your tax loss. So some strategies there. Of course, giving to charity is a great one. That always reduces your tax liability. But let's get into the Airbnb loophole, the short-term rental loophole. If you've been with us, this is where I'm going to talk through my particular case, and this is why I've been up in Reno, pulling my hair out, buying furniture, and putting blinds in, and doing all this stuff on this brand new build, is I think we all know by now, if you've been listening to this show, that real estate has this wonderful ability to use depreciation. We've talked through cost segregation studies with Yona Weiss. We've talked through bonus depreciation with Toby Mathis and with Billy Withers. So I am a walking example of this. I was looking at my and my wife's tax liability that we were going to hit for 2023 at the end of it, and it was not looking too good. And so I turned to her earlier this year. I said, we need to buy a property before the end of this year, and we need to short-term rent it. Now, I'm a real estate professional, so it doesn't really matter whether it's short-term or long-term. But if you're out there and you're not a real estate professional, well, this still works for you. This is one of the wonderful things. If you short-term rent it, it's considered active losses. So it's a little, might be a little late for this year, but yeah, you might be able to sneak in under the wire. Or if you bought a property earlier this year, or you bought a property last year, if you convert it to an Airbnb before the end of the year, you could do a cost segregation study on it. So where do I start, Ryan?
I would start with why was a good time to buy right now in the first place? So like, never mind all this tax stuff, right? Like you have to make a good investment decision. You can't let the tax tail wag the dog, as I like to say.
100%.
Tell me like why it was such a good time to buy in the first place. Like what made this an attractive investment? Because I don't just invest for tax purposes. Like I definitely consider that. But again, I want to know like what you experience in this market right now. Like what's going on out there?
Great question. So a lot of people are running around saying, you know, oh, it's so terrible. Interest rates are so high. Everything's so unaffordable. And I am laughing because for the last decade, people have been saying, God, I can't find a good deal. And it's like, well, which way do you want it? Do you want it? Do you want to find good deals or do you want interest rates to be low? But you can't have your cake and eat it too. So I feel like this is the environment that we've been waiting for, at least for the last, you know, seven or eight years. Since about 2017, everybody thought, you know, we've reached the peak of the market. And of course, the market just kept going up and up and up and up. And everybody's going, God, you can't, it's so hard to buy deals. It's so hard to buy deals. Well, I've been keeping my eyes on the Tahoe and Reno market for a long time. I think it's a wonderful market, but the prices have been skyrocketing. I haven't found anything that really works. And this is our first short-term rental. I've got a lot of friends who've done STRs. We thought it would be fun. And I've done a lot of long-term rentals. And obviously, this is the first physical property that I bought in the last 5 years. I've been throwing all my money into syndication deals. But we thought it'd be fun. And we needed the tax write-off. And I thought the Reno market was great. But I tell you, the house that we found right in downtown Reno, it was listed for $739. And it had been on the market for about 30 days. And had this been a 3% interest rate environment, we never would have gotten this house because it would have been snapped up instantaneously. So, you know, are prices coming down? No, but, you know, we've been saying for years that, you know, when interest rates spike, we don't think prices are going to fall dramatically because there's such a lack of supply. And the only way to get prices to come down is to have a massive influx of housing supply because we're just so short on inventory of housing stock in this country right now. So I think it's a great time to buy. You can always refinance later. We've got a 7% interest rate. Is that high? Yeah, but it's only, you know, we're going to talk about interest rates here, I think, on the next episode. But you date the rate. You marry the property. I'm not planning on selling this house for many decades, and we'll be able to refi and probably take cash out of it as interest rates fall and values climb again. So I think it's a fantastic time to buy if you can find the right property. So this one came along. It was beautiful. It's a brand new build. Could we create a bunch of equity by putting in sweat equity and you know, ripping down walls and doing a renovation on an older property? Yeah. But you know, I'm just simply too busy for that. My wife is too busy in her real estate business. And so for us, a new build made the most sense.
That's great. Talk about, like, you know, was there any bidding wars or did you just get in there and you just got it right away?
No bidding war. So it had fallen out of escrow. It was brand new. The developer put it up on the market. Somebody was trying to do a 1031 exchange. Their 1031 blew up. It came back to market. I randomly saw it. I've got a great realtor up there who had been sending me listings, and I got one of his email blasts, and I didn't like what he sent me, but it prompted me to jump onto Redfin, and I saw that, and I sent it to him, and there it was. And so we threw in an offer at
Why this STR? Sorry to jump in, but like, why this STR? Not like, I mean, what's the street like? The neighborhood? Why is this going to be a good Airbnb?
It's got a great look to it. It's very modern. So it's got good, it's a sexy curb appeal, easily upgraded, and it's got this massive rooftop deck. It's got a 600 square foot, maybe almost 700 square foot rooftop deck. It's the entire square area nice. Of the garage upstairs. So we're going to deck that out with fire pit, outdoor movie, pergola, barbecue area, like real, real cool vibe for a vacation rental. The rooftop deck really sold it.
Who's going to rent this thing? Like, all, is it like families? Is it parties? Is it business travelers?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question because I've been investing in real estate for about, gosh, 12, 13 years now. And in the beginning of my real estate investing career, I did a lot of analysis and not a lot of buying. Mm-hmm. And boy, do I regret that.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So I didn't analyze this property as much as I maybe could have. But I think after looking at properties for about a decade, I just have sort of a good gut feel. Looked around at some different properties that are on Airbnb, looked at their rental rates and used my friend's AirDNA login, got a good sense of what the occupancy rates are nice. around Reno. To be honest with you, I don't know if it's going to work or not. I think it will. But for $729, yeah. You know, it's a good house in a great location. It's in a great location. It's right next to the Children's Discovery Museum. It's three blocks from the water. It's going to get us a great tax write-off for 2023. And over the long term, it's going to be fantastic. You know, like it's a different way of looking at real estate investing, where you're not so concerned about, okay, how is it going to perform this year and next year? Are we going to be breaking even next year? Who cares? You know, I've got a voracious W-2 income with an airline, and we're gonna take some knocks learning how to run an STR, and we're gonna have some fun along the way. And over the course of 20 years, we're gonna make a lot of money on that property.
I like it. Lightning questions. I'm gonna just rapid fire 10 questions. How much do you pay for it? 729?
729.
What was your interest rate?
6.999%.
Okay. Cool. 7%.
7%.
How much are you gonna rent it for per night, you think?
Probably about 300 a night on average.
Wow. Okay. How many nights a year do you think you're going to have it rented?
Gunning for 50% occupancy.
50%? And what mm-hmm. what breaks even? Do you know?
I don't know. I've kind of been doing rough math on yeah, about 50% would break even. Yeah. Well, actually, no. Because 10 nights, 300 a night, that's $3,000. Yeah. Right about half, 50% occupancy would break even at 300 a night. So we'll see. We're going to use Price Labs for dynamic pricing and go from there.
You're just kind of running and gunning. I love it. And then so the lender, how did you find the lender? Or, you know, just briefly, like lender is local bank. Yep.
Got recommended a couple lenders by the realtor. Worked with one. They couldn't match the rate of someone that actually C2. We had a podcast with C2 Financial. David Temko came on.
That's right.
I reached out not to David Temko, but to my buddy who did our loan here in Hawaii, who used to be with C2. And he recommended someone in the Reno area. And he was fantastic. His name was Leo Vaskin. So he got us the loan done.
I love it. Why Reno?
I've been a Nevada resident for the last 13 years. While I'm based in Hawaii and I love it, this is not home. I think people can read between the lines there. Airline pilots can live anywhere they want, you know? And so I've been a Nevada resident for a long time. I love the Tahoe market, but Airbnb restrictions are getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And I have a bunch of friends that own houses up there, and Reno's wide open and it's growing. Tesla moved in there a few years ago, built a gigafactory. It's really cool. Anybody who hasn't been to Reno in the last like 5 years is probably thinking, Reno, really? It's actually gotten really
good. Yeah, we did ski retreat last year with our investors, right. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you bought the property, you financed it, you own it. I saw you post on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of furniture to put together, and you did your task rabbit.
Yep.
Lifesaver, come put all that furniture together. Please don't do that yourself if you're listening.
Seriously.
Way to go on that.
You make how much an hour? You don't need to be putting furniture together. Yeah, they'll pick up another trip. And use TaskRabbit.
Yeah, go pick up a day trip. Yeah, exactly. Okay, and then now you've owned the property. So let's talk about cost segregation and bonus depreciation. So you're going to take that $729,000. I'm going to get the calculator out so I can follow along.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's break this down. And cost segregation is...
And we put 20% down plus closing costs.
Yeah, when you buy a property... 729 is the purchase price, and then you break it into four buckets. So let's talk about how much, you know, and I don't, you know, this isn't like, we're not quoting you. This is the land you can't depreciate. So how much do you think that's going to take off the 729?
I was trying to find the draft report prior to recording tonight, and I couldn't quite find it, but the land is valued somewhere around $100,000.
That makes sense. It's just shy of 20%. Right? That's about 15% or so.
Yep.
Okay. So you can't, so 729, and then you would subtract that from 729 minus 100,000, let's just say. That's pretty conservative, actually.
Right. So we've got 629,000 of depreciable structure.
Yep. And then, so 629, so, you know, for the listeners dialing in, you divide that by 27.5, and that's what your depreciation, your automatic write-off is going to be without doing anything. So that's $22,800.
And that's because the residential real estate depreciation schedule is over 27 and a half years.
Yep, that's right. So $22,872 tax break just by showing up, right?
If I did nothing.
If you just did nothing. Yep. All right. So there's $23,000, let's call it, to write off against your income. And now since you're actively managing it, you get the real estate professional status, even though you had it prior, but if you didn't, you're actively managing the rental. So now you get this $22,000 break, but we're going to make this better, right?
against W-2. And that works if you're a real estate professional, but if it's an Airbnb, it works if you're not a real estate professional. So you do not need to be a real estate professional as long as it is placed into service as a short-term rental and the average stay is less than 7 days, then it's considered an active activity. This is not a passive activity like a long-term rental would be. So if it's a short-term rental, it is an active activity. And so you would be able to take that $22,000, take it right against your W-2, or like we're going to talk about in a second, you do the cost segregation study and accelerate depreciation on it, and you can take all of that against your W-2. This isn't something that I can do specially because I'm a real estate professional. This is something any pilot that's out there, no matter what their situation, you can do this as well and write it off against your W-2.
But you have to actively manage it. So you're not hiring some third party.
That is correct.
Yeah. So you're doing all the work. You're doing everything.
Correct. This year. But I don't have to do it next year.
Yeah.
And if you go back to our episode with Dan Templin,
yeah,
you can automate all the guest communications. So we'll, go back to the episode with Dan Templin. He talks about hospitable and automating guest communications and stuff like that. But yes, you do have to be in charge of everything.
Okay, so you're managing everything, you're doing all that stuff so that you can qualify. So if I was a guy and I bought this and I just like outsourced everything, like property management, booking and all that stuff,
unfortunately,
wouldn't work.
It
right?
wouldn't really work. No, you have to, but here's the good thing. Yeah. Like I said, you only have to do it your first year because that's when the big write-off is.
That's right. Okay, so $23,000, let's break that out a little bit. Have you done the cost seg report yet?
We have. So we got a $127,000 year one write-off with the cost segregation study.
Sweet.
Yeah. Plus all the furniture. We spent about $30,000 on appliances and furniture and stuff like that so far. So you tack that on because that's 80% bonusable as well.
So let's just break this down. I know these aren't going to be exact numbers, but this is like back of the napkin stuff. So $729 purchase. You can't depreciate land. You're saying that's about $100,000. I'm saying that's super conservative. So good for you. Mm-hmm. $629 is left over to depreciate. If you take 27.5, you divide that by $629, that's $22,800.
Yep.
You went and did this cost seg study. We'll get into that in a minute, like all the details around how you did that. But you said there was $140,000. Is that what you said it was?
$127,000.
Okay, $127,000. So if you take the $629 minus $127,000, you still have 502. So the way you work this, guys, if you're listening and following along, you take the 502,000 divided by 27.5. So you're going to write off $18,000 a year for the next 27.5 years that you own the property. But then you're also getting that $127,000 deduction that
in year one,
Tate got this year in year one. So boom, like, you know, and you know, I know Tate's killing it, you know, in the airlines and all that. He's flying all the time and he's making a ton of money.
It's been a big year. Yeah. My last year as a check pilot.
Yeah, it's been a big year. Yeah. Yeah. Like so captain, check airman, whatever. And so that $127,000 write off is like nothing to shake a stick at. I mean, that's gonna turn out to be what, $50,000 cash in your pocket? Is that right?
Yep.
Something like that.
It's more than furnishing the place. I can tell you that.
Yeah. And you have an asset and you have a rental that has potential for income.
Exactly.
That's going to grow and appreciate.
It'll reduce our tax liability by about, I don't know, $75,000 this year, something somewhere in that range.
Incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to put your money. So like, you know, Tate could have taken, you know, 20% and put it in a stock, right? I mean, and not had that tax break. Yeah, sure, it'd be passive, right? And that's you know, that's an advantage. But now you have a hard asset that you can call your own. You call Nevada home. You go there to ski and hang out, and so now you've got long term roots in the market. So
yeah, and our total cash out of pocket, I think after closing costs, was about $155,000, $160,000. So to get a $150,000 tax write off on $160,000 out of pocket, it's pretty amazing.
Amazing. And what do you think you're going to spend like in time on this? Like really?
You know, it's that's a good question. It's been a lot of time. We've been up there three times now for multiple days, putting in 13-hour days, you know, running around to furniture shops. And, you know, at one point I had five people over. I had two people building furniture, two electricians working on various tasks and cleaner. And people running everywhere. We've got, you know, blinds consultant coming in, you know, with the big book. You know, we're selecting fabrics for blinds and Best Buy is installing the TV. And I mean, it's been crazy, but it's been fun. It's essentially like getting to spend a bunch of money to make someplace really, really cool. And I got to tell you, it's exhilarating, exhausting, and it's a little scary because we're spending our way into a brick wall saying, hey, I hope this works. But we have a good deal of confidence that it'll work out, especially in the long run. That's the thing. It's like, don't do this if it's your last $150,000 and you're going to be left broke afterwards and the mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it's going to be stressful to pay that mortgage if you can't get it rented. You know, I'm fortunate to be in a situation now, 13 years into my career at Hawaiian Airlines, that I've got a great W-2, I've got a great base, I got a ton of passive income coming in from my syndication deals and from other properties. And so for us, it's, you know, but that's how you build. That's how you build, is slowly but surely. And it takes, this is something we're going to talk about on the next episode as well, is the time value of being in the market. This is something that I'm benefiting from now, is I get to be a little bit more, you know, shoot from the hip because I have the financial backing to do it.
Totally. You know, now that you've put all this together, I think that our listeners are going to want you to make a blog on it.
Okay.
You're just going to have to talk about your journey in this house.
We'll do it. I'm going to have a lot of resources for everyone. We have furniture lists. Yeah. We've figured out ways to get furniture at discounts through trade accounts. We've got all sorts of good stuff. So I'll put a bunch of information together for all the listeners once we wrap this thing up. You got to get on the other side of it. Let's get it rented first.
I love it. Yeah. So if you're looking for a place in Reno, you know who to call.
That's
right.
You
know how to find us.
That's right. We're going to call it the Stoke House. that's the name. Ooh. That's the name of it.
I like
it. So, because, you know, we figure to kind of go back to your question, who we think is going to rent it. You know, if you're there for a wedding, if you're there and for some reason you're tacking on days before or after a ski trip, you're stoked for your ski trip, you're stoked for the wedding. It's the Stoke House, man. It's a cool place.
Nice. I love it. I love the name. Who came up with that?
It came to me. Our friends who run a bunch of Airbnbs were like, eventually you're going to have to figure out a name for it. And when they told us that at dinner, I was like, oh boy, what are we going to name this thing? And it just sort of hit me as I was coming down the stairs one day. I was like, this is the Stoke House.
Yeah. Now, we've had so many episodes and guests and Airbnb and talking, and I'm sure you did some training and listened to podcasts. What was something that what was the biggest thing that like, you had no idea that this was like, it was a shock to you or unexpected or like a major challenge?
You know, ask me in a month. I'm sure I'll have something for you.
Okay. Nothing yet. Any regrets so far?
Zero.
I mean, be honest.
Zero. The first, you know, we closed on it in late October. The first mortgage payment is due tomorrow. And obviously we don't have any revenue. So that's where it's starting to get a little scary. It's like, we're at least $30,000 into this with another $10,000 to spend. But it's really fun. It's really fun. There's no regrets so far.
Is your listing live?
Not yet, because we're working on the quote unquote tech stack next week, where we're going to, you know, get it on Airbnb and connect it to Hospitable and connect that to Price Labs and, you know, get all the software sort of going. But it'll be live, I'd say, in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. You know what's been most fun is flying up there and sleeping on an air mattress, you know, the first couple nights in a completely empty house. And
like
just
college again.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's just something different.
Well, Tate, thanks for sharing your story. We look forward to your journey and following along with you and seeing how this goes.
Thanks.
And with that, we're going to wrap up. Thanks, everybody, for,
Absolutely. And hey, but you know, I just want to reiterate that if somebody wants to use this strategy, like we said, it might be a little late to buy something and close on it and list it this year. But if you own something that you want to turn into a short-term rental, yeah, it's a great strategy. Talk with your CPA.
Great time. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thanks, everybody. Catch you on the next one.
See ya.